On FM, on DAB, and up to date on social media. We are Radio Newark.
Hey, 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 Kevin Guthrie here, talking all things mental health and well-being. Thank you so much for listening. So just to kind of clarify why we're doing these podcasts, we're doing these podcasts to create a bridge from what I feel can be the misinterpreted, the misunderstood world of mental health, to create a bridge to making it more understandable. For me, the more understandable mental health is, the more accessible it becomes. I'm not a massive fan of the term mental health myself, but I use it because I know that it's understood by a lot of people. So that's why we do the podcasts. Please, if you feel they're helpful to people, then pass them on. I have a guest in this studio today. So I have with me Barbara Schaefer. Barbara, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
And also, thank you for being here with your poorly throat. You're a little bit croaky, but you're here, so thank you so much for that. I'm going to start with our listener question. So the listener question today, which I found really interesting, was what prevents people from accessing self-help? I'm going to answer that question, and then I'm going to pass to Barbara to answer it. So for me, it can be... When I work with clients quite a lot, I experience an awful lot of low self-esteem and low self-worth. And I think sometimes if that is too low, then there can be a lack of desire or motivation to then access the elements we need for change. So for me, it comes from inside. I guess if I look at my own personal journey, when I was about 27, 28, I realized I didn't like the way my mind worked. I didn't like the way I was thinking. I didn't like the thoughts I was having. So there was a desire there to change it. And that desire gave me motivation and then kind of led me down the path that I've been on. Barbara, for you, how would you answer that question? What do you think prevents people from accessing their own self-help?
Well, people may be blocked in their desire to feel better. If you get depressed, for example, by definition, you feel sort of stuck in a rut, perhaps. But the other aspect that comes to mind is perhaps important to mention that mental health professionals, acting with the best of intentions, can come across as quite, dare I say, condescending.
Okay.
In offering self-help material.
Right.
And saying, you know, you do this and you do that step and then you get better.
Yeah.
And it just gets somebody's back up and it doesn't help.
Well, I also wonder if it doesn't work. So what we're talking about there is the many, many different forms of accessing self-help. So it could be books, it could be reading, it could be watching videos, it could be group work, it could be individual therapy, it could be so many different things. So if one thing doesn't work for somebody, that doesn't mean to say that the other plethora of interventions isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where we're at, isn't it? It's saying, well, that didn't work, so therefore I'm out, I'm done. Was that right?
Well, I think I'm part of me has a researcher mind. And with that hat on, perhaps I'd like to say that all help is ultimately self-help.
Yeah.
It has to come or go through the inner being.
Yeah.
Whatever help you take on board.
Yeah.
And mostly, if you work with somebody else, mostly it's the relationship rather than whatever training or whatever method they're using that helps. And if you're using online resources or if you're using a chat, be that person to person or again online, it's whatever you pick up and what you find helpful, and that's the self-help bit.
Yeah, well, it has to resonate, doesn't it? It has to resonate inside.
Exactly. Yes.
So I can read a book. I'm not a prolific book reader, but if I read a book, sometimes I find stuff goes straight over my head. Other times, things really resonate and they stick. But there is this larger belief where, I truly believe this, that if something is sticking, then it is meant to be at that time. That's the information that I'm supposed to gain from that intervention. And if not, then I let go of it until another occasion.
Since you mentioned the word resonating, you know, that helps me to come in and say, for help to resonate and be taken up in that way,
yeah,
you describe it, it has to be, it has to come from the heart.
Yeah.
And be with the patient or with the client.
Yeah.
And all too many professionals feel so restricted in their environment,
yeah,
that they come across rather as, dare I say, oppressive or,
yeah,
prescriptive at the very least.
Yeah.
Because they don't allow themselves the inner breathing, you know, and sitting back and looking,
yeah,
at somebody with sympathy and empathy.
And I think that can sometimes come from the environments in which we work. So, for example, if I was to work in the NHS or other large organisations, there would be a protocol, there would be guidelines to work to. In private practice, although I am accountable to my supervisor and to my client, I have more room to breathe and to develop. Tell me why you wanted to be on one of these podcasts. What was your driver? What was your driver to be here today?
I'm now coming to the point where most of my work is related to sharing my experience.
Okay.
And assisting and advocating.
Yeah.
For people and professionals who, yeah, have to justify their position and their work and their care. So it's a nice opportunity to do that locally.
Yeah.
I'm running a small one-woman business, Beacon Social Care, from Newark, based on Northgate. And like I said, most of my time is now taken up with research and some with advocacy and some with court work.
Yeah.
But if people are interested, you know, I'm always happy to assist and find some resources for them. I've got a very flexible pay rate starting from zero. Travel expenses only when the need is greatest and acute. So by all means, try and find me there.
It feels like you have a lot of passion around the work that you do.
Yes, I do. I do. I love working with people from all walks of life.
And yeah.
It really has made my life and very interesting.
For you, where do you think your passion comes from? What's your driver? What's your motivation to work with other people?
The fact that I've been through very difficult times early in my life,
yeah,
myself is one. And the other is that at the same time, I've always been curious about life.
Yeah.
I've never felt suicidal, funnily enough.
Yeah.
I've always felt curious about finding out what was going on in my parents' head, why they were behaving the way they were behaving. Or I remember when I was about 15, I was reading a book or some newspaper articles about a child murderer. And I was trying information about what had made him,
yeah,
act the way he was. And I ended up reading philosophical books, probably a bit beyond my grasp at the time, but at least I was trying to get there. And I think that curiosity has never left me.
Yeah.
And I find it most satisfying now. I started as a social worker in my 50s, so
yeah,
I had a good time to mature as well. I find it most satisfying if I can use my philosophical mind in practical contexts and with practical questions that really help people.
Yeah.
You know, I remember one mental health patient who I just described, he was quite sad about his past, including some violence and alcohol addiction. And I said, the way I see it is when a plant grows through concrete, it comes out a bit, looking a bit misshapen at them.
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah.
Before it unfolds.
Yeah.
And he was looking at me with big eyes. I thought probably sank in, resonated with him.
Well, it's a really great analogy. There's an image that does the round on Facebooks and Instagram, and it's that image of a some kind of living plant that has come through a crack in some yeah. concrete. But you're quite right. It just needs to come through and then it can flourish. We were talking earlier about the right environment. So a plant would need, of course, light, sunshine and rain. And humans need a similar input to allow them to flourish. Mm. Tell us a little bit about your background in terms of your work background. So you're in social care now.
Yeah, like I said, I'm almost semi-retired now at 65. I started working as a social worker in England just after I turned 50. And I've done similar and related works, including work both in this country and in Germany. Came to Britain in 94. And I went back for an interim of 3 years teaching psychology to nursing students in Germany. Which brings up an interesting little story, because I was teaching them that sometimes the most difficult patient from the nurse's perspective has the best prognosis.
Yeah.
And I remember some of the younger students did not like that at all. They got quite stroppy with me for even saying it. But some of the older ones got the message that if people have to find their own way, and I think we all do in healing, whichever way it is, then that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're using your own resources and energy, and you're demanding perhaps some changes in the care you're receiving.
Yeah.
You're not just passively receiving, taking on. It is a provocative statement a bit, but I think there's some truth in it as well.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. If there's no inner desire to change, we can't force change on somebody.
Mm.
It's a little bit like somebody stepping forward and saying, Can you hypnotize? So I deliver hypnosis as well. Can you hypnotize me to feel better about myself or to reduce my anxiety? And my immediate response is no. And I can't touch those kind of areas with hypnosis. If somebody wants to stop smoking or lose a little bit of weight or something lighter, I'm really cool with it. But not anxiety, not depression, not to feel happiness. It goes much deeper than that. We can't use hypnosis to kind of fix things like that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I agree. You were asking about my professional development, and that brings to mind a moment or experience which also links in with that. You know, it has to come from the person themselves.
Yeah.
I heard one expert by experience, Jackie Dillon, say we're all on the spectrum of human experience.
Yeah.
Some may know a similar quote about Asperger's or autism,
you know,
that we're all on the spectrum.
Yeah.
But she's extended that. She says we're all on the spectrum of human experience.
Yeah.
Some even hear voices, or some have awkward thoughts, or some feel awkward.
Yeah.
Some of the time, or most of the time. So we're all on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I found that incredibly helpful, not least to when, as I was working in mental health services in this country at the time already, to counter some of the, I found very restrictive or restricted behavioristic approaches.
Yeah.
Surface approaches, you know, dismissing people as merely attention-seeking and things like that, which I find extremely unhelpful.
Well, the thing is, it's not that kind of immediate kind of passing of a label or sticking a label on somebody isn't helpful to them at all. I quite often use this quote that if somebody walks into my therapy room and says, I've just beaten up an old woman, Can you help me work out why? I would never, and I promise this, I would never judge on what they had done, because that's not my position. I cannot judge. The very fact that they'd walked into my therapy room and says, can you help me work out why, is they have immediate respect from me. So it's not, it's no good me saying, well, you're probably this or you're probably that, or it could be because of this. It's like, no, we're here to work out why. I'm not going to stick a label on you because that doesn't help. So it's about, for me, it's about being with the client and their journey and allowing them to unfold in front of you, as we talked about the plant earlier.
Mm. That, of course, doesn't mean they don't have to face justice.
No, not at all.
In whatever, I mean, have worked in forensic mental health services.
Yeah.
But then you'd still treat the vulnerable human being underneath the criminal, sort of, or inside the criminal.
Yeah.
That wants out and will get out if nourished and nurtured.
Yeah, yeah. Which kind of almost leads us on to the criminal system, but I'm not going to go there because that would take us forever to start unpicking. We tapped in there on labels, and you know we do live in a society where we're very quick to stick labels on people, give them a diagnosis, give them some letters. What's your thoughts on labels? Are they helpful, unhelpful?
Well, I've experienced people on both sides of the spectrum as far as that is concerned. Again, some people find it extremely helpful to have a diagnosis of whatever it is, being bipolar or having an anxiety disorder or whatever. And some find it restrictive and restricting and feel paralyzed and, oh God, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
If that's me.
Yeah.
Personally, I am probably slightly on the autism spectrum, and I am ever so glad that I have evaded any kind of treatment or diagnosis all my life. Thank goodness for that. I've had other difficulties to get through and to grow with and learn from, but
how amazing to hear you
not that
kind of own that label there and go, I'm kind of cool with it. I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. It is what it is.
I think, like Greta Thunberg said recently, you know, being awkward can be a great gift in the right circumstances.
So yeah,
I completely agree with that.
Yeah, no, me as well. I come from the same area in terms of labels. I respect that for some people, they almost need the label to help them understand why they might be behaving in a certain way. But I also agree that for some, it can be very restrictive. And also, I've seen in the past somebody being given a label and then start performing to the label.
Mm.
It's almost like they go away, Google what the label says they should do, and then and then they start behaving in that way, which is completely unhelpful. Mm-hmm. But it's, I really sit on the fence. What I try to do in therapy is, because I have a lot of people that will step forward and say, so this is what I've been diagnosed with, can you work with it? And my immediate response, this doesn't go down very well. A lot of the time, my immediate response is, I'm more than happy to work with you. What we do with the labels is we don't disrespect them, but we sit them to one side so as I can work with you as a human. Because under all of those labels, you're a human. You're a human being with a human experience. And that's what I want to connect to, and that's what I want to work with. Usually at that point, I don't see the client again because they really want to work through the label. And I authentically, I can't do it. I really struggle with that.
That's interesting, yeah.
It's interesting. It happens quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they hear is me disrespecting the label. I'm like, I'm not disrespecting it. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to work through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like seeing somebody's sexuality or somebody's gender and me only working through that because somebody is a woman or because they are straight or because they are gay or whatever the label is that society's put on. I just set them to one side a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And see a human in front of me that has had this human experience again.
Mm-hmm. Listening to you, what comes to mind, or what I've just remembered, is an experience as I was working in an older people's team. It may seem to lead away from your point, but I don't think it is, actually. I was asked by the female carer to assess her sort of elderly husband for dementia, because she felt he needed some services.
Yeah, right.
And so I did my spiel. I had my standard questionnaire, and I talked with him, and she was mostly present. And then I also talked with her and offered some suggestions how to improve everyday life, yeah, to make it less stressful for her that he wasn't behaving in the way she could cope with, or she could influence some of the time. And very interesting and obviously heartwarming, at the end of a series of conversations, she said to me, "You know what? I don't think we need any services. Somebody's just listened to me."
Wow.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
It's so, well, it's just
hardly
so
any bigger compliment you can get as a professional.
Yeah. It's just really, really powerful, yeah, that she got to that place, yeah, through you being there and just hearing. Yeah. Just hearing what she was saying.
The only other thing I think from listening I did at one point is I offered him a slightly cheeky alternative interpretation for his slight confusion or,
yeah,
decreasing mental capacity, as far as he was observing it, perhaps himself, because he was Welsh, coming from rural North, yeah, Wales, yeah, and I've lived there for a number of years in a beautiful surrounding, and I loved it. But I said, you know, it's a bit like being from North Wales, you know, a contemplative kind of person, retreating into themselves.
Yeah.
That's what you are doing now at this point in your life.
Yeah.
And they both looked at me. I don't know whether it's got too much of a value, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
Because there may be other factors,
yes,
involved, both in the Welsh temperament and in this man's life.
Yeah.
But it helped them.
Yeah.
And somebody says, I think I originally heard that one in German, who heals has got it right.
Yeah.
You know, you can turn that yeah, on its head, but I think there's something to it. And I'm really grateful I can work in a profession there. I can use those kinds of skills.
Yeah,
as a human with humans.
Yeah, that's it. We are humans working with humans, whereas sometimes I think in the larger organisations, we lose that connection. And again, I understand why. I understand that we have to be careful, and we do. Sadly, we do live in a society now where there's a lot of legality and a lot of you know, where there's blame, there's a claim, that kind of society. And it saddens me because we are humans, we're working with the humans, but we're surrounded by this bureaucracy that just doesn't allow us to connect.
Well, sometimes it's just it just takes a little step of thinking outside the box,
yeah,
not too far even. You know, that again brings an example of working in a mental health team to mind, where two things happened there. Fortunately, I was able to have a little light bulb moment and introduce something. I don't really claim much credit for these kinds of things, because they do just happen as due to light bulb moments. They just come. One was a woman who was actually the mother of an inpatient. She came. She was anxious and she was lonely, and she came and she was asking for services for herself as well.
Yeah.
And she kept being dismissed by staff, and I was there as a locum, and I heard staff saying, oh, she's just attention seeking and she's a dreadful woman and things like that. And I went and had a chat with her. It didn't take very much of my time at all. And I gave her a link to online self-help material. Yep. And not just about anxiety, but other concerns. And I knew the material, and she could work with it without any risk, and she could pick and choose.
Yep.
And she went away, and she only came back to ask for an update or some more material like it.
Yeah.
She never stood at the door and you know, made staff feel, yeah, awkward ever again. And the other example, in the same vein, within the same team, I was actually working on the admin side with my skills. I was screening telephone referrals, and there was quite a waiting list. So again, when I was speaking with patients to assess or triage the situation, how urgent they needed to be seen,
yeah,
I made it a habit, and I introduced a response, not just sending them a letter with their appointment time or, you know, you're now on a waiting list, but I sent them some self-help modules.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic because, many didn't need an appointment anymore. Yeah. And the ones who did were happy, didn't phone in, didn't get worse because they had some tools in their hand.
Yeah.
So I was really glad when one of the nurses at the end of my time there said, oh, can we use that now? Take it on. So that was
And of course they could use it because it's just there, just there to access.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it helps when you have a professional point in the right direction and almost validate the resources that you're pointing at. We talked about the resources off air a little bit, and I recognised immediately that they were resources that I'd used kind of earlier in my days as a therapist. Really, really well done pieces of resource. So and like I say, I've used them myself. Before we close, is there anything not profound, because that could set expectations too high and hearts racing, is there anything that you want to leave the listener with in terms of their own self-help, their own mental health, any words that you want to leave them with?
Perhaps it's a researcher, again, also an expert by experience, Eleanor Longden, who in a TED talk said at the end, the inner light never goes out. Whatever you're going through, trust that.
Yeah.
And you can come through it.
It's always there.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if sometimes it's harder to see than other times.
Absolutely.
Barbara, thank you so much for being here. That was a fascinating little, it was only a short chat we had there, but it was a fascinating chat. I would like to do that again sometime and go into some more detail around some of those subjects. Thank you. And I really hope that your throat gets better.
I hope on all accounts. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Remember that the podcasts are available on radionewark.co.uk. iOS and Android apps are available. Contact info is 01636 678033, or you can email the studio at studio@radionewark.co.uk. Remember that these podcasts are recorded for you. They're recorded for you to listen to. They're recorded to help us create a bridge between the mental health as we know it and a more accessible mental health. So if you have any questions, if you have any queries, if you have subjects that we're not currently covering that you would like to know more about, even if we have covered them, if you'd like to know more about certain things, then please email in, drop me a message on Facebook. I have a page on there called Guthrie Therapy. You can drop me a message on there. I'll respond via there. They're for you, and we want them to be for you, and we want you to help us create them. Okay? Till the next time, remember, as always, the most important thing you can do is take good care of yourself. Be happy. Bye-bye.